Welcome to episode 26 of Digital Outbox. Good evening from a cold Glasgow. Joining tonight is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello there, Ian.
And also joining us is nobody.
Absolutely no one. They've all abandoned us.
Exactly. And bizarrely, they've all abandoned us because they're in Glasgow. And so Shaq's back up north and conveniently forgotten any recording gear.
You mean we don't record this in the same room as each other?
Oh, no. The secret's out. The magic's gone.
Yes. I was trying to think of something witty and it just abandoned me.
It's Sunday and I will see him right now. I am shattered.
Yeah, you were sounding a bit tired earlier.
I've perked up now. Perked up. You know, I've got the show hat on. Always a trooper.
The joyous occasion that is recording the podcast.
Yeah, and you're not at your normal berth for recording. You've actually escaped the top floor, haven't you?
I've gone portable.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah, so I'm sat at my old folks' house.
And, great.
Well, let's fingers crossed their computer holds together.
Tell me, see if anybody's like stalking us. We've probably just given them everything that they need to find us.
Yeah.
Our first story this week is good old Rupert. and News Corp are trying to tie with Bing. And I'm not so sure about this. There's a whole lot of stories this week about... So previously the story was de-index from Google. And there was a couple of commentators at the time had said that wouldn't it be great if they actually said, yeah, we'll de-index as long as we go exclusive with Bing. And then a week or two later, here's the story. So whether they had caught wind of it or whether they were just leaking out the story, so it wasn't a big surprise.
Well, I think I mentioned it last week that there was quite a lot of talk about this.
I was including you in one of these technology
people. I am obviously a commentator of
yes.
great repute.
But now, obviously, the FT have reported it, so it must be fact.
It's definitely getting stronger, isn't it?
Yeah, and just a couple of interesting things for me. If you look at Google News, and somebody did a screenshot of Google News for the week, now all the stories on its front page, and there was maybe like 15, 20 stories, there was only one from, I think it was the Wall Street Journal. So right. I don't think it's got that big an impact on them, to be honest.
I think that... I'm still worried about the direction this could be going. Again, it could fragment all the searches. If you want to search for particular content, you have to go here. Yep. It depends how other content providers react to this, whether they rally to the war cry or whether they actually say...
Well, there's a couple of smaller ones. Got it wrong. A couple of smaller ones have said they're willing to back Murdoch with this. And I tend to not agree with it. And in some ways, I can understand. You know, people might look at it as it's competition for Google, it opens it up. But I want to be able to pick a search engine and just find everything I need.
Yeah, it's not competition that we want. This is the wrong type of competition. This is competition between search engines based on the content they're allowed to show. For me, search engines on the internet should show the whole lot.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Bing and Murdoch certainly are. Microsoft and News Corp are definitely meeting their minds. I mean, Microsoft's bought their market share so far.
Yeah, they've definitely put a lot of money into this, haven't they?
And you wouldn't put it past them trying to buy exclusive news content either.
No, I think, they want a quick publicity hit. They can get it by having this content. But I think everyone's unsure about how big an impact this is going to have at the moment. And so am I, but I don't like the direction of it.
Ultimately, I don't think they'll delist a full story. I think they'll lock it down so you only get the first sentence.
Which is fine, it's all you need. Yeah. I guess, that probably won't bring you up high up the search results, but, that's their problem.
Next year will be interesting. I think that's all we can say.
Yeah.
Moving on, we have a number of... I guess it's all tied in with Digital Britain and piracy and all that kind of good stuff. So first up was a story around a pub being fined for Wi-Fi copyright infringement.
Yeah, so this is a pub owner who's actually been fined £8,000 for someone, I guess a content provider, identified that someone from his establishment had downloaded an illegal something or other, whether it's a film or a bit of music or whatever. But it was downloaded at this chap's pub via his hotspot. So he was offering a hotspot to his customers. And he's been fined £8,000 because of this chap downloading while drinking his beer. And it's just a very frightening direction to take in. I mean, I think hotspots are obviously one of the big things that we're all crying out for. We want more and more of them so that we can access the internet wherever we go at the fastest possible speed. And this is going to clamp right down on that. It's taking us in completely the wrong direction.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, you know, I know, and I'm going back maybe a couple of years when we were talking about sending letters to people's homes, and there was a lot of that kind of anecdotal advice on the internet saying, just say it was somebody connected to your Wi-Fi and you don't know anything about it and there's nothing they can do. But it looks like there is.
Certainly looks like they're changing the balance of who's responsible, aren't they?
I'm actually surprised that under the cloud you could do it. I actually thought they would have, you know, torrents or news groups or whatever all locked down, but then
I guess that's the argument here. But nevertheless, does it mean that you're not responsible for any of your actions whilst you're on someone else's internet connection? Does that person by proxy take responsibility for everything you do? You know, if you're organising a terrorist attack, suddenly is it the pub owner's fault for that?
But I don't understand is why don't they take the ISP to court? Why don't they take the cloud to court?
Maybe they did, and maybe the cloud then passed on that liability downwards. It sounds incredibly wrong to me.
Yeah.
It should be anyone who's on a connection is responsible for what they do.
I mean, if you're a business right now thinking about doing this to provide a service to a customer, you'd think, well, A, I'm not too fussed. B, I wouldn't go with the cloud because, you know, ultimately I can get fined for somebody just one download at some point.
But wouldn't you just say it's not worth it, full stop?
It depends how important it is to my business. You know, if I had a kind of coffee shop or a pub, I would probably try and, you know, offer up something myself. But then I'm a geeky tech
person.
And
fair enough, but you're still responsible for anything that anyone does. So how do you manage that?
But you can lock that out.
It's not easy, though.
I'd be cockily confident.
until the bill arrives on your mat.
Yeah, I just blame somebody else. I don't know. I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
I think it's
not right, is it? It's not the right direction.
And ultimately, I think we'll end up with less and less coverage now.
Exactly.
We start to see people,
which
just
is exactly the opposite of what we want.
Exactly.
And so again, another thing that's happened this week is we've had ACS Law saying they're going to send out 1,500 letters. I guess they're working 15,000. Sorry, my mistake. They're working on behalf of content providers, I assume, in the kind of same way that clamping operators work on behalf of businesses. And they're just scatterbombing these letters through to people that they identified as
murky.
Potentially.
It's a bit murky because they talked to another legal firm and they reckon they weren't directly acting on behalf of content providers.
So they're just sending out letters saying that someone's downloaded something illegal or copyrighted content, and they're offering them out-of-court settlements. So it's almost like it sounds like a scam letter. That would be my first impression when I got it through the door.
What was even worse was that there was a representative from Which spoke to BBC News, and seemingly this happened... It was either earlier this year or last year, and a lot were accused of downloading pornography, and hence, because of the embarrassment or etc., they just paid up.
Yeah, so
is just a scam. Well, it sounds like a scam.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a scam loosely working on, real law, but it sounds far more like a scam and something that needs to be looked into by the authorities.
Definitely.
So yeah, 15,000 letters. You know, you're going to get some hits there. So yeah, they're offering they're saying it's a few hundred pounds for an out-of-court settlement, or you could be taken to court and it'll cost, you know, potentially multiple thousands of pounds.
Yep.
But my response to that would be, go ahead.
Oh, definitely. I wouldn't be paying anything.
And I would say that's probably good advice for anyone that gets landed one of the letters. Certainly don't just pay up without getting legal advice.
Definitely. At the same time, Virgin are trialling a piece of software called Seaview. which is provided by a company called Dedica. And this is actually going to do a deep packet inspection on your internet traffic and try and identify peer-to-peer traffic in amongst, or peer-to-peer packets, sorry, in amongst your traffic. Now, at the moment, they're saying it's purely from a research point of view, just to try and understand what is on their network, etc.
Spying.
Yes, it
pure
does.
And simple.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. And certainly,
but,
when you look,
but
at
they've
it,
got no choice in putting systems like this in process because the, you know, Digital Britain report requires that they do this.
And I think this is it. It's nothing to do with the actual company behind it. They're just providing a service. And ISPs, I think, are going to be forced to do this kind of thing because they're ultimately going to be the policemen.
They are required to, yes.
Yep. So it's...
I mean, it's stop and search of everyone. It's like, you know, a policeman in the street stopping and searching everyone just for being where they are.
Yeah. And it's back to that. You're guilty. And they're almost saying they're guilty until we decide you're not.
Exactly.
So
It sounds horrible to me.
It does sound horrible. So in the pitch document from Dedica, they've also said that you can categorise file sharers and apply technical measures against them or target them to be sold legal alternatives. Virgin Media have said there's no plans to use such features.
But
again, time will tell. I mean, I think we can see where this is all going. I mean, the UK over the last 6 months, it's just becoming just more and more restrictive going forward.
Now, I mean, I've been writing an article this week. I haven't finished it yet, and it'll probably go on the Digital Outbox thing, all about sort of rights holders and how we're both getting it wrong. You know, people have got the wrong kind of... they're not taking responsibility for their actions.
Mm.
They believe that things should be free that aren't, but doesn't matter. They're not free, so you can't have them for free.
Yeah.
But this whole pandering at the moment to the content providers,
I know.
Especially without the right levels of checking, it's changing the whole internet, and it's not in a way that the internet was designed to be.
No. I mean, I know there's an argument that the internet's freeing everything up, but that doesn't mean it should free up everything that's copyrighted. And I think that's my issue with the whole thing. This kind of idea of like music is free, and it's not.
It needs to be sensible. The whole thing needs to be sensible. At the moment, it's all going one way, and that's punishing you and me for using our own content, basically.
Indeed. So, if you feel strongly about it. And how useful this will be, I can't say. But there's a petition been set up. So if you go to petitions.number10.gov.uk/don't disconnect us, and we'll put the link in the show notes, please sign up.
Yeah,
and
I've
pass it on and get people to sign up as well. And it's getting a lot of Twitter love at the moment. So a lot of the kind of prominent tech and, I guess, more geekier tech celebrity people have been passing this around as well. I don't actually know how many it's got up to. The last time there wasn't. It's now up at 30,000. So 27,096 people have signed up.
You'll see with something like this, it's going to be one of those things where it starts off pretty quick because the tech community obviously want to protect their interests, really.
Yep.
And it's going to be just depends how widely it gets reported in the news and whether people grasp the importance of this.
Well, it's been up for a month. It's got another year because you can put up a petition for a year. My only issue is that these petitions hardly seem to affect policy whatsoever.
Yeah, it does seem that this site's there for... if government advisors don't get listened to by the government, then why would they listen to a petition, you know?
Indeed. Even if it does get more people in an average election now.
Ah, yes. Indeed.
So, our final bit of news this week is Google Image results in the headlines.
Yeah, there was it was a pretty nasty old situation going on earlier in the week where if you typed Michelle Obama into Google Image searches, a doctored image of Mrs. Obama was at number one on the results, and it was a racist, ugly image that it's out there on the internet, but it was at number one and it was causing offence. Google originally did take it down, but on the basis that the site that was hosting the image had malware on it. So they due to that, under their own policies, they removed it. However, that so they moved their host, so again, it was, you know, Google had to put it back in based on the policies that they have. So it was back in on the search results, and obviously it caused a lot of offence and was causing a bit of a stink. And they received lots of complaints, you know, which they're pretty much saying we can't. we want to display what people are searching for on the internet. And to be free and open, we can't just doctor results because they are offensive.
Mm.
I thought they dealt with this quite well in that they actually took out an advert for themselves, appeared above that result.
Yeah, they took out a few adverts, actually.
Yes, so, and it was pretty much saying, you know, Google image results can be offensive, we know.
Yeah.
And we understand. But they gave their reasons for not removing it. I think part of the problem with this whole thing was that, you know, there was outrage in the blogosphere. But obviously that just meant that people, more and more people were linking to
the
image, and they caused their own problem. They were their worst enemy.
But it is difficult. You know, whether we like it or not, there are nasty things out there.
And if we want to remain free and open, we can't have Google deciding what we can and cannot see. You know, again, like I said, I think a search engine should be search the whole of the internet and all its content.
At the same time, and I totally agree with you, but at the same time, there is an argument that there is quite a lot of content that is not indexed.
Yes, yeah, I mean...
You know, so the obvious one is, like, you know, child pornography. You know what I mean? If one of them appeared in an image, you know, Google would be shot. You
know, yeah, so and they obviously do quite a lot of checking on that kind of thing.
So there is stuff that is quite rightly, I think, anyway, censored.
But it's not up to Google to decide what level that stops at. And I think, you know, people are saying, and I think they agree, that if a lawmaker or a country said that image has crossed the line and shouldn't be there anymore, they would remove it then.
I think there was a bit of pressure on the White House to try and issue some sort of statement. I don't know if it was the more right-wing side of the media over there were trying to push this. And they just said, no comment. You know, and Google quite rightly said, unless we get a political, you know, statement that says this is illegal or whatever, then it stays.
Which I think the whole thing was handled quite well.
Yeah. So the image has now been removed by the original content owner, and it's now not disappeared, but I guess it's well down the search index results now. Because I just tried before we started tonight. And I went 4 or 5 pages deep and couldn't see it, which was good. The only thing that was a bit odd was that Google showed a related search at the same time, just a text hyperlink which said Michelle Obama ape, which I guess maybe other people are still searching for it to try and find the image.
They must be.
But, you know, it just felt a bit unnecessary because I'd searched for Michelle Obama, so I don't see how Michelle Obama ape is related to my search.
Again, I guess it's just the fact that that's how their algorithms work.
Yeah,
I don't know anyone's forced that link in there.
I guess it's just popularity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the next popular search term. Moving on, we actually have some Apple news this week, despite Shaquille not being here. I know it's a shocker.
Yeah. I mean, Ian.
The worst thing is it's all negative. I can't believe this.
Oh, well, I promise I didn't write any of these in here.
Yeah, right. First up, we mentioned the Apple worm from a few weeks ago and its misreporting and how it was all very innocent. Well, there's a new worm, and it's pretty serious this time. It's targeting people in the Netherlands who are using their iPhones for internet banking with the bank ING. So the worm actually changes the root password as before, but it actually then it puts up a kind of spoof web page that you think you're talking to that particular bank, and then it grabs all your details, and all the usual stuff probably happens after that, and you get robbed.
So this is still based on the same entrance, is it? So
pretty
it's
much.
People with SSH on their iPhones, but
if you took one of the easy jailbreaking routes and didn't change the password, then you're stuffed, or potentially stuffed. And I guess much the same before, either don't jailbreak it, or if you want to jailbreak, change the password afterwards. I mean, it's a bit like having your router open, you know, if you just keep the default admin passwords. There's so many sites that list off the passwords for routers now. It just makes it dead easy just to log into other people's routers.
yeah, fingers crossed this is going to be quite a prominent thing shown up on those jailbreaking type websites.
Just yeah, you would think, sure. And it's something I've not looked into, but you'd think they would be trying to either give advice or trying to generate like random passwords and say, here is now your random password. I'm sure they could do something like that.
Yeah.
The new 27-inch iMac with the i7 chip.
Which don't look that nice for very long.
No, I do still want to buy one. I was in the Apple store yesterday and it was like,
I was quite surprised that you didn't. I was expecting you fully to say, I have got one.
I did ask yesterday and they don't supply the i7 in store. You need to order it online only.
So if they had said yes yesterday, would you have cracked?
Anyway, speaking of cracked, so cracked screens or even iMacs turning up DOA, not very good. Now, there's something about that whenever there's a new product from Apple, they're always, and when I started buying mine, it was always this urban myth, don't get the first gen, because the first gen has always got slight teething troubles or, you know, it's a brand new, you know, design somewhere, so there's always it's maybe prone to slightly more issues than the second gen one when it's all ironed out. And it looks like in this case it's proven to be true.
Yeah, is it quite wide to have Apple acknowledged this? I guess they have.
They don't tend to acknowledge these things, you know. So I guess the reason you could see it as being quite widespread is that there's a couple of certain gadgets when a couple of guys had ordered it from Engadget and one of theirs turned up dead and another one turned up a cracked screen. Yeah. But then when you actually saw the volume of people with the same issue in the forums now, then again, maybe they're just making it up. I doubt it, but
yeah, I doubt,
you know,
it.
Usually you've got to be pretty sad to be going in and making up that kind of stuff. So it does look as if there was quite a few people affected.
I'm sure there's enough sad people out there, but I imagine it's based on reality. I mean, how pissed off would you be? I mean, you just
go home and be nice. I'd be in a rage.
However, it's up to, you know, in those kind of situations, it's how Apple deal with that. And hopefully they deal with that in the right way, which is, you know, quick time response.
Exactly.
To get it redone.
Certainly. I mean, I've been to, is it twice? Twice I've actually had to take something to the Apple store. And each time the service has been spot on.
Yeah. And that's how you rescue a situation.
Exactly.
You know, Apple haven't got a reputation for being perfect at this, though. So it'd be interesting to see how they do work with it.
Well, it seems to be the issue seems to be more of actually admitting things. I think they're okay at actually fixing, but not admitting.
Yeah, but as long as they do fix your, if you've got one of these cracked screens, as long as they replace it, then it doesn't matter whether they actually admit it.
One of my friends took his iMac along, and it was one of the same one I've got, a 24-inch. He had a little bit of discolouring in one of the corners. And I'm sure it was after quite a while. You know, it wasn't a trivial amount of time. It wasn't, you know, 1 month in. It was, you know, 11 months, and probably just as about the guarantee's about to pop, and he got it replaced. You know, so they're usually fairly good.
Yep. So let's hope. Hopefully, if you've got a cracked or a dead one, they'll be good with you. So we're seeing iPhone being sold in Tesco's.
Yes.
Tesco Value iPhone. I bet it's not Tesco Value, though. I bet it's exactly the same price as everyone else.
I tend to agree, but wouldn't it be lovely to have a little bit of competition? Just a little tiny bit.
It's a little thing of the contract. I'm sure the contract says you cannot sell for any lower than this. That,
exactly.
You know. And it must be watertight. Otherwise, Orange would have tried something. And Vodafone have already come out and said they're not playing on the money side.
And if you look all around the world, all the new providers, they aren't competing.
No. So there's something in that contract which categorically says you will be hung, drawn and quartered if you fight on price.
Yeah.
And so Tesco, people like Vodafone are having to fight on their network coverage because Tesco works on the O2 network, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, Tesco Mobile is actually jointly owned by O2 as well.
So basically you're not going to get any better coverage by going with Tesco.
No. And I don't think you're going to get any better value unless they do something with, you know, and again, so they can't do anything with 3G network. The only thing I can think is some sort of, you know, Tesco points or something crazy like that, something that ties it with Tesco slightly.
Maybe Tesco points, but that I think that's about as far as it'll go. Everything else will be the same, and it's just trying to capture that market that are walking in and know about the iPhone, but you know, it's an impulse buy, but it's a big impulse buy.
But at the same time, the iPhone sales are really shooting up now that they're starting to appear on these other networks. You know, people that either refuse to move or couldn't move for whatever reason are now got an iPhone as a choice.
It's funny, just as it's getting bigger and bigger, I'm starting to get niggles with mine. I'm just getting annoyed with it.
I've had niggles.
I need to move on to the new thing.
App Store. The App Store keeps on, so it tells me that there's two apps updated. I download the updates, install them, check a couple of days later, and it'll say one of those apps needs to be updated. And it goes on, and it goes on. So it's like four or five times I'm downloading the same app.
Yeah.
I'm getting annoyed.
Mine rattles now for some reason, and also it keeps corrupting my music library when I do a sync. Whenever I sync it, I press on my iPod button and nothing appears. So it's pretty frustrating.
That's not nice.
Especially if you've just gone out somewhere in the car and want to actually play some music. Anyway, by the by, it's just one of those things. I think maybe we're going to see, you know, our community, so the techie, geeky people, looking for the next thing. So maybe Droid and Milestone is the next thing for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Pampry, I had a little play yesterday on one. Definitely not.
No?
Yeah, no, definitely not. Final Apple story is still an iPhone. And just today, there are rumours or hints that of an actual iPlayer app for the iPhone. So the BBC put out a monthly press pack all around iPlayer and talked about what was the most popular downloads and, you know, what is the usage statistics and all that kind of good stuff. And in this month, they've actually got their screenshots, and it looks like an actual iPlayer application rather than the website. And it shows things like live streaming options and a downloads option.
Live streaming would be nice.
Yeah. So in the pictures, it's only connected to Wi-Fi. Again, probably so you can't, you know, I doubt you'll be able to stream over 3G, just like the website, the way the website works at the moment. There's no comment from the BBC. There's nothing else to back it up apart from these screenshots. I can't see them mocking up screenshots and then putting it in a press pack.
No, and so, with their current policy of trying to get the iPlayer right out there in as many different places as they can, this
exactly
ties in, doesn't it?
Exactly. So, that would actually be pretty sweet.
I mean, I don't know how much benefit it's going to be over the website, which is pretty comprehensive anyway. I just wonder whether they could do maybe they've enhanced the website, or do you definitely think it was an app?
Oh, no, it's an app.
Okay.
Well, why you would have things like downloads, etc., when it's just a website, I've no idea. You know, that to me is Scheme's app.
Yeah, but you can do that with the beta version of the iPlayer, I think. You can download. Anyway, we'll see. But yeah, app would seem the sensible thing. We've also seen that apps can be much more streamlined and efficient than going through the website of things.
Yeah, and again, selfish reasons, it'd just be great if there's a list of program and I just wanted to catch up when I'm away in my travels.
Yep.
I can download it and catch it on the plane. Be great. We'll move on to gadgets and games. And the first one, and I don't know if you've ever used a TiVo.
I haven't.
So one of my friends in Glasgow did. So TiVo is an electronic programming guide, but it was an actual service, very much American-based. And it came to the UK. It's actually Sky that brought it to the UK many moons ago, or they bought it.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it.
And then did nothing with it and tried to promote Sky Plus instead. So a lot of the diehards were like, oh, TiVo is just the best thing ever. And this week there was an announcement that Virgin Media's new HD box, which they are building right now and will be releasing next year, will be powered by TiVo software, which doesn't guarantee the kind of TiVo software of yesteryear. It's a brand new service that they're actually putting together, but very exciting.
I wonder whether it's TiVo by brand, or whether TiVo are actually going to be putting this thing together.
Well, it actually said they were developing the front end for their converged television and broadband interactive interface. So it sounds
so as
like
long as you don't
new
mind being spied on, Virgin might be going up in the world again.
Yeah, well, it's good competition. I mean, you can argue the plus and negatives against Sky and Virgin when you look at what they offer. But when it comes to actual interface, I've always thought Virgin sucks royally. And I used one recently, and it still sucks royally compared to even the new HD EPG. So
which has worked very well for me. I like the new Sky interface.
Yeah, it's generally okay. It's just that I find since it's come out, the box is a bit more buggy. Every 2 or 3 weeks, it'll crash.
Yeah, I've had a couple of crashes, and also I find it clunky.
You know, so sometimes I switch it on and I'll press, like, you know, I want to go to, you know, 408, and I'll do 4. And 5 seconds later, the 4 appears.
Yeah.
And I know the box is about to crash, so I just unplug and plug it in again, and it's fine. So that, stuff like that is a bit annoying.
Yeah, but in general, I think they got it right. And, so, and other times it runs flawlessly, so I think it's fair to say.
Oh, no, definitely. It's also been an interesting development at the same time, but TiVo is dying in America. So their market share has dropped back to the same level it was in 2004. But it has
which
a real...
Which is amazing, because they love it over there, don't they? Everyone talks about it.
There's a real love of the service, but I just think other people are either caught up or they've taken over it now.
Mm.
So your pet peeve, iPlayer on the 360, Chris?
Yes, god damn it. So it's on. It's everywhere. It's everywhere else now. We're going to get it on, you know, our iPhones. It's on the Wii and the PS3. But it seems like BBC have come and announced that there's a problem with Microsoft agreeing to put it onto Xbox Live, because Xbox Live is supposed to be for paid for content, and the BBC can't make it paid for content because of BBC licensing issues. So it's being delayed. I guess discussions are still ongoing, but again, this Microsoft angle of everything has to be paid for on our network.
Yeah.
Seems to be causing us to lose out on a service. I still think there's something with Sky in there. I think that Sky maybe have got some exclusive rights for a bit.
Well, the bit I don't understand is I don't pay for Facebook or Twitter.
Exactly. I mean, when have I ever paid for them? Never.
Yeah. And fair enough, you could argue about there's Last.fm premium services and stuff like that, but I don't pay for that either.
No.
It sounds
like a load of rubbish to me. Technologically, I can't believe it's impossible to do on the Xbox Live. In fact, I thought it'd probably be the easiest of the platforms.
The only thing I can see is that Microsoft are saying, if you want iPlayer, we want you to make you a gold subscription only. And BBC are saying, well, you can't.
Maybe that is exactly what it is. Maybe,
you know, and that's the only thing I can see.
So maybe, yeah, they're saying that iPlayer has to be under the gold, because silver, anyone can have a silver subscription, that's right.
Yeah, but then... Yeah. Yeah,
I imagine that's exactly what it is.
It just seems, I don't know, it just seems like they've taken a gun out and shot themselves in the foot.
Sort it out. I want it on my Xbox.
Just so that Chris doesn't have to plead like a girl. Please sort it out. Our final bit of gaming news is premium subscriptions are coming to the PlayStation Network. So this was one of the things that a lot of the kind of fanboys will always point out, that if you can plug in your PlayStation and it's all free online and you've not got this £40 a year fee that Microsoft charge, and it's so much better.
Not just the
stuff.
Fanboys, they've advertised on that basis.
Yeah, but the fanboys really like to rub it home, which always annoys me, because it's still night and day. You know, if the same game come out in both consoles, I know which one I'm going to pick.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be the 360 for online. The interesting thing is they're saying it's premium content and services. So they've not actually said what that premium content is. The rumours seem to be that it's not going to detract from the current level of services, and that this will come next year.
So we don't know too many details, but it sounds like it's going to be some sort of, I guess, Xbox Live type login to gain services and things.
Yeah. Which will be no big surprise. I mean, Xbox have got 20 million... You know, people using it, they've got loads of revenue coming in a year.
Yeah, that's 20 million people all paying near enough £40 per year.
A lot of money. A lot of money. And the only reason I think Sony haven't charged up to now is they're in catch-up.
Yeah, and I think they sounds like they still will be for a while.
I think they will, but it's now a lot closer. It's a lot closer. But, I mean, some of the services that they didn't have and still don't have are pretty shocking. You know, so I'd be a bit loath to, if I think back to when the PlayStation, you know, network first came out, and with PlayStation 3, if they'd charged £40 at the time, I'd be so hacked off.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a reason it was free, and it was because it was pretty rubbish.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the PlayStation 3 for me is becoming much more of an attractive proposition, I think I've said before, because we're not going to see new consoles now for the next at least two and a half years. So it becomes something that I might want to buy.
I think
Whether I'll buy a premium subscription, I don't know. Depends what they offer.
I think you'll break when it comes to Gran Turismo.
Yeah, there's a chance.
Yeah, there's a fairly, chance. Fairly strong chance.
But to be honest, it's more about the fact that I'll want a Blu-ray player by then. And this offers a cheap way in.
No, definitely. I've been buying a lot more Blu-rays, actually. I think just as they've not been buying them initially as they come out, you know, just wait 3-4 months. And
yeah, they come down in price pretty quick.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good. And that's it for gadgets and also games.
And at least picks, then.
At least picks. And you lucky people, we've got 2 picks each. Just because to make up for the lack of Henry and Shaquille.
We've got a bit of space with them not being here, so let's
fill it. How do you want to do this? We'll do one each?
Yeah, go on then.
I'll let you go first.
Okay, my first one is something called browsershots.org. So it's a website, and I would call it the mother of all cross-browser page checks. Basically, onto the site, you type in your URL, and you select which browser and operating system combinations you want to see that page displayed in. And that's across Linux, Mac, and PC. And I counted, I think, 82 different combinations. So there's tons and tons there. So type in your URL, press go, and basically it goes and connects to its farm of computers, and it grabs a screenshot of whatever URL you've put in. Not perfect, because it's not interactive, so you're not getting to move around in those sites, but you do get at least a chance to see how they look and check that they're, you know, at least all readable. You can define down to, you know, what kind of screen resolution you want to see, whether it's got JavaScript, Java, and Flash. But if you restrict those things, I have found that it doesn't always come back with all the combinations you want, and it might take longer to come back with the screen grabs. It gives itself 30 minutes to go and get all those things for you, and you can leave the website and come back to it. And you can even extend that time if there's still screen grabs it hasn't got that you would like to see. It's a good service.
Is that free?
It's free to do that, yep. I think you can only look at a URL once in any X number of time period. I'm not sure exactly what that time period is, whether it's a day or a week or something like that. I think it might be a day. So if you're right in the middle of developing a website, it's probably not the tool to be using, because you know you can't make an amend and then see the changes, but it's definitely good as a final comprehensive check.
You got quite excited during that when you're getting quite breathy.
Sorry, you didn't give me the...
tights.
That's it.
Which is just going to sound completely bizarre. I'm just trying to remember, because I recommended one a long, long time ago.
Well, there was the Adobe one. I can't remember what it was. There was where you could onion skin several browsers.
That was it. Yes.
Yeah. And there's other ones out there which I might highlight in the future. No, I don't know.
That's really good. Very handy.
There's something called BrowserCam, which that's not even my pick, but if you want to go and check that out, you can actually pay for that service and actually get VNC connections to actual boxes. So you can use lots of different combinations, different operating systems, and actually get to interact. But that obviously costs money.
Cool. Right, my first pick is Handbrake, which is a DVD ripping utility for the Mac. And also there's video conversion as well. It's free. It's not been updated for quite a while, but the latest one has over 1,000 updates, allegedly, which I don't really believe, but it probably is.
We put in some extra comments in the code.
Yeah. Exactly. Can I change a pixel width somewhere? That's a change, get it in there. It's now gone 64-bit for Leopard and Snow Leopard. And it's just one of these little handy utilities that is really, really nice to use.
And something like this, you just want it to work, and I guess it does.
You just want it to work, and it does time and time again. Never really let me down, and also with the video converting now, it just works so well.
DVD ripping is notoriously difficult, I mean, deliberately done so by the
so it doesn't providers. It doesn't get round any of the protected DVDs, so you'd have to use a couple of other utilities, which I probably should have prepared and put in, but when I do my post through the week, I'll put in some links to some other Mac utilities for getting around some of the DVD protection out there.
Yeah.
But once you've got around that, Handbrake's definitely the tool to use.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I wanted. I wanted to rip all my DVDs onto hard disk so I could stream them to my TV downstairs without having to keep changing the docs. And I just found out how difficult it is to actually do. So yeah, it'd be good to have a whole list of things.
So instead, you just sit upstairs now and you don't need to rip anything?
No, I actually get off my arse and I and I put the new disk in the tray, annoyingly.
It's terrible. I mean, it's a first world issue. It's a terrible problem.
I mean, there are ways around PC, so maybe I should highlight that as well, how I've got around that.
Right. Your second and final pick.
does exactly what it says on the tin, this one. It's a website called www.downforeveryone or justme.com. And basically it's a check that, you know, if a website is down, type in its URL and this website will let you know whether it's just you that's experiencing the problem or whether everyone else is. And that would has come in useful on a number of different occasions for me.
Well, it came in useful for me through the week to see if Digital Outbox was down for just me.
And it wasn't. It was down for everyone.
It was down for everyone due to some more network issues with our hosts.
Yeah, apologies for that, guys.
Although it has settled down. So they have moved over to some new network hardware and it seems to have settled down quite nicely. So I won't knee-jerk. I am very tempted, but I won't.
I certainly haven't seen a problem over the last few days.
No, which probably means it'll be down when I come to upload this podcast. So my final pick, and I'm pretty sure I've done or I've mentioned the software before, but I do like stats. So I've mentioned I do like stats before. This is the guy who does some great videos all around statistics, and it's a guy called Hans Rosling. If you go to the website www.gapminder.org/videos, and you'll just see a fantastic number of really interesting videos, and it's all around the stats that you can pull out of the software that is his organization have got. And the software's called Gapminder, and you can use it on the website. And there's over 200 indicators of global development, and it's all mapped over time and all the different countries, and it's just... And you can animate it really nicely. So out of this software, you can get some really nice and I guess interesting statistics. The thing that makes it for me, it's not the software's nice, but it's him. He's such a good presenter. A little bit of humour, but he gets his point over. He just engages with the audience. They're actually great. And the first time I saw him was through the TED videos. And I saw another one that he'd done last week, and it was absolutely superb. And it was just kind of charting the growth of, you know, India and China, and just how over the years and the different events it's affected their growth, and just now how they're catching up with, you know, US and UK when it comes to you know, average salaries and also life expectancy. So it's website's excellent, and also what's quite interesting is the software behind Gapminder. Google bought it a couple of years ago, so you can actually on a Google Sheet, set up your own chart and then bring in a Google gadget called Motion Chart, and it lets you create the same type of animated bubble graphs that you can use in Gapminder.
I should definitely have a look at that then. That sounds it's quite interesting.
It's one of these things that just, you know, they're usually about sort of maybe like 15 minutes, the videos he does, and they're always like the 15 minutes just flies by. It's just really interesting.
Sounds like something that I maybe shouldn't go on at work time then, because otherwise it would be far more interesting than what I'm doing.
That's up to you.
Indeed.
Everybody needs a break time to time.
Yes. I have far too many.
And that's our picks done. And that's the podcast done.
Hey.
Fantastic. It's amazing how when you get near Christmas and there's no news, our podcasts get quicker.
Yeah.
Although no news doesn't equate to 43 minutes, so maybe I shouldn't have said that.
No, exactly. We've actually covered quite a lot of content today.
Well, it's just the two. We just rattled through.
Did. Slick as ever.
I wouldn't have gone that far.
No, maybe not.
If you want to find out more, our website, which is still up, is www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us on info@digitaloutbox.com. We're on Twitter. Digital Outbox is our Twitter name. And we'd love to hear from you. So if you fire up your Skype client and add Digital Outbox, send us a message, send us a comment, send us a question, anything, and we'll include you in next week's show.
If you've got any picks, that'd be great to hear.
Absolutely. That's a hint, Tam, if you want to include a pick. I'm picking on Tam because I know he's listening. Well, he will be. But that's flash forward. Anyway... if you want to find out more about me, my blog is eandy.net and my Twitter account is Schweeper. Chris.
And I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
And I would mention Henry and Shaq, but they're not here.
Nah.
So, see you later.
Later. We'll be right back.
wasn't too bad.
That was all right. I completely forgot to do a I was supposed to do a shout out today.
Oh, you can still do it.
She's going to kill me. Hello, Jess.
Well, we'll need to do it properly next week now.
Yeah. I probably won't have my testicles. See, I don't know whether this is the done thing. Anyway, I forgot.
If Jess is anything like Tam, she'll just think she's an afterthought.
I think it's exactly what she'll think.
And I think I'm just dropping in it even more by saying that.
She did actually listen to an episode or beginning of an episode and realized she didn't understand why she was my friend anymore. She's not a techie person, but she does know the Intel music. Yeah. Maybe we should just not do shout outs.
No, I think shout outs are cool. As long as you remember to do them.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you could just move this to the beginning of the podcast. Then we can slickly move it in.
I've not got the skills. And also, I think it'd be far more funny to see you get your testicles slapped.
There's a video about that.
To be honest, it's not going to make your voice drop.